Hey, and welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features. Today we have a wonderful documentarian all the way from L.A. Emily Arroyo is here with her film Miss Snake Charmer. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
I guess we have to start. How did you stumble across this pageant?
My co-director was listening to one of our favorite podcasts, and they did a really short little bit about the Miss Nature Charmer pageant. Both of us were raised in Texas, and so it was kind of, you know, neither one of us had heard of it, even though we'd lived most of our lives there. So she called me and said, there's a rattlesnake roundup pageant, and I heard tiaras and rattlesnakes, and I said, let's go. I have to see this. I need to hear, you know, we would listen to the podcast, and it was amazing, and then I was like, I have to go. I have to see this for myself. So that's how we came across it.
Well, it was kind of like when I saw your picture, I'm like, I see a tiara and a rattlesnake. I'm like, I need to know more. That's all I needed. I was sold on that alone. That's why I contacted you.
Oh, amazing. Yay.
On the poster, I was like, okay, I'm in. I don't know what this film's about. I didn't know it was a document. I'm like, I need to know more.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how we felt. It was just like, there's something here, these two contrasting things, and I just had to be a part of it. I had to go and see for myself.
So how did you broach them? Like, did you just phone them up and say, hey, we're coming? Or how did that work?
So basically what we did is we started reaching out to the pageant coordinators and just sort of touch base with them. And then they were like, oh, this is great. We're on board. And then from there, she basically, I mean, it's a small town, so everybody kind of knows everybody. So then she basically put us in touch with the JCs, which is the Junior Chamber of Commerce organization that runs the roundup. And then from there, you know, we met every single person that we could possibly meet there. So city council, the mayor, all of that kind of stuff, and kind of just snowballed. Everybody, and it was cool too. Everybody was down to talk. So we kind of just went from there.
So I want to discuss. So you're going to show up. You show up to, did you even know where Sweetwater, Texas was?
I knew it was in West Texas in between Abilene and well, because I grew up in Dallas, okay. And my co-director was in Austin, so we were like, it's somewhere in between there. but I did know it was in West Texas, yeah.
So I'm sitting there, and you go down, and I go, and they keep stressing things. Like, they say Sweetwater is family. They do stress that a lot, I found.
Yep.
So you're, I can use the word foreigner, I think, in the sense that you're going to town.
Yep.
And Sweetwater family?
I think so. I think for, you know, what was so amazing about this community going there is, again, you know, even though I grew up in Texas, you know, I'm a little bit more eccentric, a little bit more out there. You know, I've lived in LA for 10 years, so definitely felt a little bit on the outside. So showing up, we were a little nervous, course, and apprehensive. This was also pretty close after the election, and so we were a little worried about, you know, are they going to accept us and all of this kind of stuff. And one of the coolest things is Rob McCann, the man who said, you know, Sweetwater's family, one of the first things that he said to us is, you know, we put our politics and all of those things at the door. Because you guys are here to support these young women, you are family, and we are so supportive of you being here, and we're excited for you to be here. And we were really welcomed with open arms. And I was, again, having grown up in Texas, I lived in a really small town, and I never experienced that growing up. It was a very racist place where I grew up, and we were the only Hispanic family. And so it was really challenging. And so part of this documentary and making this documentary was actually like a healing process for myself, because I had to become an adult and go to this tiny town to finally feel accepted by Texas, if that makes sense.
So you left Texas to go to LA to come back to feel welcome in your home state.
Well, I left Texas as soon as I graduated from high school. I was like, I went to undergrad in Boston. I didn't even visit Boston. I was just like, I knew that I wanted to get out.
Wow.
Rachel, the co-director, she's in Austin, so it was a little bit easier for her. But, you know, I still consider Texas my home. The community there is really tight-knit. Just getting back to that, it really does have this sense of family. I'm sure that there are definitely pockets that aren't a part of that, but for the most part, it really did feel like that.
So I guess we're going to have some weird questions. Did you have to eat rattlesnake a day in time?
I did. We did eat rattlesnake. We didn't have to, but I wanted to because basically on media day, all the girls behead a snake and skin it. And then what was cool is the JCs were there. And so all of the meat they cooked up in their fryer with their, you know, mama's recipe of how to spice it and all of that kind of stuff. So we ate the rattlesnake. You know, it's a little watery chickeny, but I wanted to try it because I felt like these young women can do it, I can do it, and why not?
Would you do it again?
Eat rattlesnake?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had it in, there's a really fancy place here in LA called Worst Couche. And so they'll put it in like a sausage. That's when it tends to taste a little better because it really just takes on the flavor of whatever it's next to. It's also super lean. So that's it's a good, you know, good protein. but I don't know that it would be like my regular go-to dish.
So when you showed up for media day and watched all these young women skin snakes, did that fascinate you as much as it fascinated, I think, your viewers will?
Yeah, I mean, the whole sort of practice of it was really interesting. A lot of it was very educational. So before any of that sort of went down, the JCs basically gave us like a quick course in rattlesnakes and why the roundup happens, all of the different things that happen to the rattlesnakes and things of that nature. So it was, you know, in some ways it was a rite of passage for the contestants. And I also participated after all of them went. They were like, do you want to do this? And I, you know, personally, I have a really hard time with the idea of it. So I thanked my snake for its sacrifice. And, you know, tried to honor it as much as I could. But then, you know, I went for it. And, it was one of those things where it was like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And I wanted to be supportive of them as well and really just immerse myself into the story. And so that was, for me, I felt that was part of it. But I have really long nails. And so I wasn't allowed to hold the snake because they're like, that's too dangerous, but you can kill it. So I was able to do that, but not like I wasn't able to hold it because they were very concerned about my long nails.
I just want to stay on those. I mean, some of the women are like covered in blood.
Yeah, it's strange because, so basically the whole, I mean, yeah, it's weird because the whole snake is like still moving after you remove the head, the nerves. And so then when you go to skin it, like, you know, there's guts and all of that kind of stuff, hence the trash bag chic look that they all rocked. And then, you know, when you roll up the skin, it's like there's all blood and everything's still there. And so it was pretty gruesome, not even gonna lie.
So then I want to move to my focus to the marketplace, I guess, is the way I think. They have dances, they have a gun show. It looks like they're even having a bake sale.
Yeah.
Now, what impressed you about that?
Well, I think what was the most impressive thing about the whole thing was the fact that there was a roundup. Like, I'd heard of rattlesnake roundups. Again, growing up in Texas, it's something that happens in different communities. But to be at something at this scale was sort of mind-blowing. And through the process, of being there, we found out that we got used to the sound of thousands of rattlesnakes, which is just crazy because they're all there and they're in the pit. And, you know, so it's quite fascinating. The sound of it is really kind of the most like, whoa, this is crazy, because you hear them as you approach the buildings that all of, you know, that the snakes are in. And so then attached to that, there was, yeah, like you said, there was a flea market. There was an entire carnival set up with roller coasters, Ferris wheels. Then they had a chili cook-off. And what I think is really great about what this community has done is they figured out a very creative way to create income, because everything goes back to the community. This is the JCs are a nonprofit organization. So all of the money that is generated during the Rattlesnake Roundup weekend goes right back into the community. And so I think for a place like West Texas and a place like Sweetwater, where they had a big oil boom and that went away, they had a gas boom, that went away, they had a wind boom, that went away, what's been consistent for them is this roundup. And it's, I think that there's something really interesting and cool about a community coming together and, you know, let's just do it all. We're going to have a punch show. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to, you know, so there's kind of something for everyone. And I just think that and that's where you also get that feeling of family, because everybody sort of kind of comes together. You know, even if people don't want to see the rattlesnakes, you can still go to the flea market and things like that.
No, I want to go back to the rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
Did you go in the pit of rattlesnakes?
I didn't personally, but the rest of our crew did. Our DP, that's how we got some of these shots. Yeah. And Brian is phenomenal. I give him nothing but credit. He is a shorter man, and so when they put the waders on him to get in there, you know, they like hardly fit him. And then, you know, you realize, oh, I'm standing in a pit of 3,000 rattlesnakes.
It's 3,000 rattlesnakes in that shot.
I mean, that shot in particular, there's hundreds. I don't know if that's where, I think in total there's something like 3,000, 4,000. So there's at least a couple hundred.
I loved it. Absolutely loved that shot.
Okay. It's, you know, it's interesting. You should, you know, hopefully you'll get to go sometime.
If I'm ever that way, I will 100% go. I would urge anybody near this place to go check this out.
Yeah.
This Tech Snake Charmer is tough, and everything about West Texas.
Yep.
Again, I'm going to ask you, is she tough?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Alyssa Soles, that was what was really interesting, too. I think you have a concept of what contestants are in a beauty pageant. And then you meet these young women and you realize, wow, these are super strong, powerful women. And so the year before, Alyssa Soles, who was the crowning reign, she did a 4-H presentation. You know, you have some of them who do archery contests. You know, there's obviously people who do the singing and things of that nature, but even Annalise, who won, during rehearsals, in between things, she's studying calculus. You know, she's doing flashcards and all of these kinds of things. And, you know, it was really amazing to see the kind of hard work that they were all going through, because there was, like, midterms, there were AP tests, you know, there were competitions going on, all kinds of stuff going on. And, you know, they were just like, we're going to do this. We're going to keep going. And so they really are super tough. And anybody, I mean, I was exhausted and I didn't even participate in the pageant. So I think anyone who's able to put themselves out there like that and be that brave, that takes a lot of toughness.
This may be a hard question on the spot, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Before you knew who won, did you think you knew who was going to win? Because I know I chose somebody.
We all had a pool. The crew, all had a pool.
And did somebody win? Because she was my number two who won.
Oh, Annalise.
Annalise was, I loved her. She was not the one I thought would win.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really, she was always up there for me. I had a couple of, you know, people that I was just like, I don't know. It could be this person. It could be that person. And even talking to Laura, you can see in the documentary, she was like, I really can't tell. Yeah. I really don't know. You know, I think it was, I'm sure every year it's super special. This year that we were there, I felt like it was just magic. They all got along so well. There were no bickering. There was no fighting. Everyone was just like, it was so cool to see this sort of like sorority form and these connections form between all of the contestants. But yeah, we had our own pool, and our sound engineer, he won. He said Annalise.
I said the gymnast.
Yeah, Sierra. Yeah.
Sierra. I can't remember the names, but she was, the Annalise was number two. Sierra was my number one.
Yeah.
And I was so happy to see Annalise win because I did not expect her to win.
I was so, so happy that she did. I mean, it was just amazing. And then Sierra won this past year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, she was clearly on her way. But it's interesting because, I mean, personally for me, growing up, my family, we were the only Hispanic family, where I lived. And so to see this really amazing family, first of all, Annalise's family is phenomenal. Her dad was there, and her mom and her sisters were there every single day supporting her. But to see this beautiful, strong Mexican brown woman win, everyone to be so happy for her as well. That was just so special, and it made me feel really happy to be alive.
Well, I think that's the point that I got in the film by watching them, because she was the only non-white person.
Yeah.
And I said, well, she's not going to win.
Yeah.
Just because of where she was. And I was so happy they picked her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I had the stereotype. Maybe it was me that should have chosen her when originally. Because she was the best choice in my mind. But I'm like, well, because of where she is, she's not going to win. Mm-hmm. And I love that about the people, that they said, nope, we're going to let everybody. And she won. I went, great for her.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting community. There, again, there's a lot of complexity to the history of Sweetwater. There's a lot of history there. At one point in time, that was Comanche Empire. So you have a lot of really deep roots from Mexican, like from Mexico, because at that point in time, it was Mexico back in the day. And so there is a great legacy of Mexican tradition. There's also a great legacy of indigenous culture there. And then there's like this really bizarre time of frontiers and things of that. And, you know, the railroads are really what kind of put Sweetwater on the map. I mean, I think that's what we all thought too. We're like, oh, this beautiful girl, she's not going to win. Like, you know, and then she did. And then we found out that she had also won Yucca Queen, which is another kind of, festival that they have. And she won Homecoming Queen. And so then she also won Miss Sweetwater, which is, oh, and I think she also won Prom Queen as well. So just won the year.
Did you find that the dress choices, I thought, really described the person in their own style a bit more?
You know, first of all, when I saw Annalise's dress, I could not believe my eyes. I was like, this is the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen in my life. I thought it was so cool how they picked their dresses. And, you know, I do think that there is a little bit of reflection there. And, you know, what I love about Annalise is she seems like just very demure and whatever, but she's a risk taker. And so I think her dress really reflected that too. And then you have someone like Sabra, who's just like this super bright and happy. And so her bright red dress is just perfect for her. The evening wear was just really cool for me, just to see all of their different styles and how they did their hair and all of the things.
Did anybody refuse to be interviewed for the film?
Yes. there was a little bit of, we were told by the WASP Association, which is the Women Air Force, the WASP Museum, which is the Women in Air Force Museum. We went over there and they were very resistant to participate in the documentary. They had a whole kind of perspective that I thought was really unfortunate. It felt very judgmental. And so they basically decided that, you know, and told us after we had, you know, viewed everything and stuff like that, which was still fascinating, an amazing museum. But they basically were like, we don't want anything to do with this documentary. Which I found to be really unfortunate that they were the only ones that said no.
I also want to ask, where did you, the librarian, I think I should have wrote down her name. That was fascinating. The woman that told you about the books and this and that.
Uh-huh.
I quite liked her. I wanted a little bit more of her, but I understand why you couldn't show me any more of her. It wouldn't quite fit, but I thought she was fascinating.
Melanie, she was like our Sweetwater angel. She knew everybody. She knew everything. And what she has done in that museum is incredible. It is, it's one of the most well-curated and well-documented museums I've sort of ever been in. The Pioneer Museum is just full of history, especially of that area. It has one of the largest arrowhead collections in the country. It has, there's a giant mammoth tusk there, and the house has been kept really preserved. But she knows all the stories. She knows everything about everything. And I mean, I think our interview with her was like, I don't know, probably a couple hours. And then we spent, you know, a solid couple days just being at the museum with her and going from room to room and listening to the stories that she had to tell. And, you know, we asked her, we tried to ask her everything that we could think to ask her about the community. And she was just, she was, and also the dog that she was holding, she had just rescued this little puppy. And so the puppy was kind of scared. We're like, just hold it, whatever. I really felt like we could have just done an entire documentary just about her and the Pioneer Museum, honestly.
Did you find any of the ladies have any fear of snakes? Because I saw none of that.
It's funny, they were a little freaked out, but the contestants were like, cool. Yes. But the moms and stuff like that, they were a little bit more like, oh, no, I don't want, you know, I don't want anything to do with it. And, they were all like, I mean, even you can see in the documentary too, we're like, all right, who wants to go first? And Brooke was like, I'll go. So it was pretty fascinating. And then to see them at the, you know, at the roundup in the pit, and then, you know, they're like, let's go chop some heads off. And I was just like, wow, no fear. That's pretty impressive.
What did you think about the parade?
The parade was real cute. It was super cute. What I loved about the parade is that we got to meet people in the community that we hadn't met before, and we got to see people in the community that we hadn't seen before, because we were so focused on the pageant, we were a little bit isolated in that way. I mean, we did meet with other people, but it was always like we met with the city councilor, it was like at her office or something like that. So I loved being at the parade because we just talked to as many people as we could and just sort of asked questions and, you know, got to hang out and have fun. And of course Miss Texas is there, and she was really sweet and really cute. And, I think it was really fun for the girls and for everybody. And it kind of kicks off the whole sort of roundup weekend. And, I think it gives an opportunity for different organizations to sort of flex a little bit and different people to sort of show off things. And yeah, I thought it was really fun.
I thought it was interesting, the sash names. I wrote them down. Miss Redneck, Miss Flowerbox. Where do these come from?
So I think that they're the sponsors of them, but it's also just very strange too. to have it on those sashes.
So after doing all this shooting, what's the one thing you learned that you didn't think you would?
One thing I learned. I think the one thing I learned was that this is, I guess, I mean, it's kind of the larger thing, but what I learned is that this is America, and that this is where we need to focus, is coming together despite all odds, all economic odds, all differences, and coming together as community to support our young women, our young men, whoever, but for me specifically to support our young women and give them opportunities and allow them to express themselves in safe and encouraging and empowering environments. And it really felt almost like a microcosm of so many places in this country, all over the world, you know, these really small communities. And I think what I had so many preconceived notions going into it. And so for me, it was a great learning process to learn, no, actually, this is what we're talking about when we say, you know, this is America. This is what we're talking about when we say this is community. Because for all intents and purposes, we were opposite sides of the political spectrum, you know, different economically speaking. You know, I'm a creative artist. A lot of the people there work in agriculture, engineering, or, you know, in oil or things of that nature. So there's a lot of differences in terms of, like, our day-to-day life. But what I realized is that we all have the same desires and goals and hopes and dreams. And, you know, that's the core of it. And that's what I've taken that with me, you know, when I'm in it. You know, a lot of things are going on politically speaking. And so I always just remind myself, hey, you've been to places and this community that opened up their arms to you. And, you know, don't forget that lesson, that at the core of it all, this is what is the most important thing, is community.
I don't even know if I should follow up two more questions, but I do have two left.
You
got
as many as you want.
After that one, I'm like, wow, we should just end now. You have very interesting musical choices throughout your film.
Yeah.
Where'd you get them from?
My uncle. My uncle Jeff, he, besides being my uncle, is a phenomenal musician. And so he and his business partner, they have a record label in Italy. They make any type of music you could imagine. So they make, you know, like house music, you know, psychedelic, rock and roll. And, you know, we were starting to kind of put things to picture. And I was like, you know who I think would be amazing is if we sent this over and see what they would come up with. And he was super down, he was excited about the project. And so they put together the music for, I think, 90% of it. Obviously, Me Too is Meghan Trainor, but other than that, it's all them.
You just reminded me about something that I did have written down, and I forgot to ask you about. How did you get the Meghan Trainor song?
Blood, sweat, and tears. That was tough, but we got it. You know, you just have to go through the licensing process. I was lucky enough to know a friend who knew her manager. Uh-huh. So initially I reached out to her manager, and then they kind of put me in contact. They put us in contact with, you know, label and all of the legal things and stuff like that. So then we just kind of went through the process of, you know, the usage and what it's for and all of that kind of stuff. But I hope she sees it, because that was our theme song the entire time we were there. That was the theme song. And so, I don't know, I think she would love it, because it was a really great, and again, it kind of just fit the moment, you know, and it was so cool to see these young women walk out with all this confidence and bravado to a song that is literally talking about, if I was you, I'd wanna be me too. And I just thought that, you know, what, how special, what a special time, what a special moment for these young women to get to do that, to walk out to something like that.
My last question I ask everybody, catering. What did you do for it?
There was this amazing burger joint that on Tuesdays and Thursdays had 50-cent burgers. So we ate those.
Hold on. One burger is 50 cents.
It's an old school town. Old, and it was the best burger you've ever had in your life. It was so good. So we would Dairyland. We would go there. Otherwise, you know, we cooked a lot for ourselves. We went to the Walmart and bought groceries, and we all cooked for each other. And, you know, this was done on a shoestring. We love making stuff a budget. And we all chipped in, and, yeah, that was kind of it. It was like, all right, well, what do you guys want for dinner?
Okay. That's it for me, but I have fun questions.
Okay.
And they're very random, so you're going to have to suck it up like everybody else does. Favorite documentary? You can have a couple. It's okay.
Okay. Okay, why my brain just went blank because I was, like, flooded with all of them. I would probably have to say, God. Well, I love anything Werner Herzog. I'll say that. I love Tabloid. I think it's such a fun, fantastic documentary. I mean, they're all so good. And I'm also a huge true crime fanatic. So, like, I also get into really, really into those. But I think the documentaries that really impacted me were all, like, Werner Herzog films and documentaries really kind of introduced me into the world of documentary, and that spark came from.
A documentary you want to make but you don't have the funding yet?
I am wanting to make a documentary about my nail artist. I don't know if you can see these, but
I can see them. Nobody else will be able to see them. They are beautiful.
So, she's a phenomenal woman from Honduras and has an entirely amazing story. She has a fantastic immigration story, life story. So we want to do an experimental documentary where she talks about her life through her nail art. So that's the next big project that I really want to work on, but I don't have, you know, the funding right now.
Last question is really easy. Your favorite food?
My type?
Sure. Whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. Mother, please forgive me for not saying New Mexican food. But I feel like it's got to be Vietnamese. I love Vietnamese food. There's nothing like a bowl of pho. Oh, I love pho. So good. But I'm also kind of a simple. I mean, who doesn't love French fries? I love French fries. I love cheeseburgers. I love pizza. But I really do love Vietnamese food. I think it's so fresh and phenomenal. And then second to Vietnamese food would be, like, my family's type of food. We're from New Mexico and Texas, and so I eat a lot of green chile and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, you haven't told anybody where to find your film yet, so you better tell them.
So MissNateCharmer.com is where you can find it right now. We're still in the festival circuit. So we just got into the Dumbo. It's their first New York Film Festival, Dumbo Brooklyn Film Festival. So we just got into there. We were at the Sheridan, Wyoming Film Festival. And so we're hoping we can keep doing that. And then probably after the film festival circuit, we'll start looking for distribution and things like that. But you can find it on our website.
Awesome. Thank you for your time. You're amazing.
Thank you so much for reaching out.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.